Well, hello to you and welcome. My name's Ivan Barry. I worked for around 20 years in mental health recovery roles, and in recent years I've been learning a little about non-violent communication, and I have a little sharing to make today. It's called Jackals, Jackals. So, with that in mind, let's begin. They hide in unseen places, the little nooks and crannies in the soil, lurking even deeper in the dark forests and the twisted branches of the subconscious self. And you can forget sometimes they're even there. However, all it takes is the mewling sound of a little lost tiger cub calling for its mother, and then, like ghostly shadows, they take form and appear. Oh, yes, I have jackals. Don't we all? And they present themselves for my inspection and attention in the following places. One, the bathroom mirror. Oh yes, it's here first thing in the morning, where unshaven and bleary-eyed, I hear a little inner voice, and it says this: "Look at the state of you. Oh my goodness, you're looking old. What happened to your Alexander the Great years, your youthful vigour? Those shining blue eyes, that big engaging smile. Where have you gone?" In truth, I've had a lot of dental surgery in these past weeks and months. Teeth extracted, lots of drilling. There are vacant spaces in the building site that used to be my mouth. Still now, it's waiting to be filled in somehow in the weeks ahead, and I'll be sitting once more in the dental chair. So I smile thinly, sigh, and I reach for my toothbrush. Two, when I think I hear a criticism. Occasionally I'm sensitive, only sometimes, but it does happen. And it seems to come from anywhere, from anyone, at any time, but particularly then. I've learned that jackals sometimes are not choosy on timing, but they certainly know how to select the words to suit the given situation. A good friend of mine, let's call him Ben, who worked alongside me in a large psychiatric hospital in Scotland, described me in a Johari's Window team exercise as bombastic. We'd been invited to find three adjectives to describe the qualities that we thought we saw in each other, and it was great fun until that point. But I remember freezing and blushing red, my eyes widening. "Well," he said, you have a lot of strong opinions and a big personality." But of course, I understood the word very differently. A little later in the same day, I looked it up, and it said, "A person who makes a lot of noise with no real meaning or serious content." Ooh, I quietly seethed for a couple of days until Ben and I managed to share a beer, and he explained he didn't know that this was the dictionary definition, and that he valued my opinions and even my occasionally bold statements regarding psychiatric practices. He was so apologetic, and I allowed him to buy me a beer, and all was well. But in the period since that team building exercise, I passed through something of a small internal crisis. I felt my hard work and dedication to the cause of patient rights in a system that often fails to hear their voices was well regarded by everyone, including the doctors and nurses who I worked diligently to have a positive relationship with. But now, well, I wondered, did they also see me as bombastic, overconfident, strident in my views, a man, to use the Shakespeare quote, making a lot of noise but signifying nothing? I can recall sitting at home that evening and thinking, it's time to find another job as soon as possible. But of course, Ben looked up the word and came in back to the office. Oh, he was so shameful, so sorry. It was the wrong word, he said, to use to describe what he felt he saw in me. And so once again, the bar called us, and all was healed. Words, huh? Three, whenever I'm asked to give a talk or lecture to a live audience on mental health, and when I learn that some of those audience members are senior health professionals and academics with many years of training and experience and awash with high-level qualifications, Now, I've given many presentations over the years on mental health, specifically on hearing voices, and new and creative ways to understand difficult experiences and manage better, but I still become filled with self-doubt. It's usually the day before the event too, like last-minute nerves before a show. And this jackal is a regular visitor to me. "You're a fraud," it says. "Oh, they'll see right through you. You don't have the expertise to talk on such a subject. Email them now. Tell them you're ill. Apologise. And with a click of a send button, you'll be free from this burdensome opportunity. And then you can avoid the shame of failing live in front of 200 people. Go on. Do it." And then I sit and I breathe. I can feel the tension in my chest and my mind whirling like an out-of-control wind power turbine. And I let these feelings be. I allow them to have a voice. I think they're protecting me from possible pain and humiliation. Non-violent communication has helped me to learn to try and translate these calls from the underground parts of the self, the psyche and the soul. You see, I grew up in a home with a lot of built-in tension and aggression. My stepfather drank far too much and my mother struggled to care for 6 children. It's a task they were both either unable and unfit to manage for many different reasons. And I was the eldest son, subjected to a lot of hostility and unfounded criticism, accusations of wrongdoings that almost always led to me being called a liar and a thief. And to be honest, I did steal food occasionally from the nearby stores, but it was in order to feed myself and my brothers and my sisters. As we were undernourished, neglected, discussed by neighbours as a family that somehow needed an intervention. But nothing ever happened, and this continued for some years. To top it all, I was punished regularly with sticks and belts for imagined crimes that my stepfather concocted when he was drunk. And so at 11 or 12 years onwards, I became a runaway boy, a street kid, I guess, sleeping wherever I could find a safe place, often at friends' spare rooms, and avoiding the attention of the police who were looking for me and the school teachers who wondered why I was no longer sitting in the classroom. And when the police did catch me, I was just simply returned to the house, sent back home, despite on occasions telling the police who picked me up what had been happening. But they said their main duty was to get me back, and that was it. And the stories I shared sound so outrageous that they didn't want to believe them, or where they weren't likely to believe them, and they would just listen and shrug and take hold of me and push me into the car. I realised retrospectively that these early experiences have helped me in some unusual ways to grow as a person, but they've also left an indelible mark on me. I am hypersensitive to accusations of wrongdoing when I feel I've done nothing wrong, and I react strongly to if I'm not believed when I'm telling my truth. Although I'm glad to say these things rarely happen these days, thank goodness. And so my jackals often hibernate for lengthy periods, and I forget again they're even there, existing, lurking in the shadows and waiting for their moment. They seem to take their life energy from my lived memories and lived experiences, but now I'm better able to be a witness to them, to understand something of their origins and to translate their preening and whining voices as an integral part of my self-survival mechanisms. Internal responses to perceived slights, working to warn me, keep me safe from further harm and make sure that no one can hurt me again. But I have to say, it's taken me a long journey to get to this point and this level of self-understanding. I have learned through nonviolent communication to listen to my doubting and critical voices, to identify my feelings and search for signs of unmet need. And I can translate and even enjoy my own private jackal show. And I've developed a newfound respect for my little jackal pack. I never thought I would ever say that. Thanks so much for listening. Goodbye for now.